Okay, should we get started? Bismillah, bismillah, walhamdulillah, wa salatu wa salam ala rasulillah, wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa barak wa salam. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. So we've been looking at hadith number 7 of the 40 hadith of Imam Nawawi. This is a hadith that says, Adinu Nasiha, the religion is sincere advice. People want to pull it up, and then maybe we could have somebody just read it in the Arabic and the English. And then today we'll wrap up with this hadith. Does anybody have it in front of them? Do you want to read it? Go ahead.
On the authority of Tamim al-Dadi, may Allah be pleased with him, the Prophet, peace be upon him, said, the religion is nasiha, sincerity. We said, to whom? He, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, responded, to Allah, his book, his messenger, to the leaders of the Muslim and the common folk.
Does anybody want to read the Arabic? Yeah, go ahead.
عن أبي بكر بن أوس الداري أن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم قال الدين النصيحة قلنا لمن قال لله ولكتابه ولرسوله ولأئمة المسلمين وعامة.
Great. So we've been looking at this in a little bit detail. We looked at the different categories. What does it mean to have sincere conduct? Sincerity in the sense of nasiha to Allah, to his book, to his messenger, to the leaders of the Muslims and to the common people. And talked about in a lot of different frames. Last Monday we didn't meet. Some of you might know one of our community members, Waleed the Bossi, passed away unexpectedly. May Allah grant him peace and entrance into Jannah without any judgment. And so it got to his janazah and just didn't end up getting back in time for the dars. We still had iftar, and we're going to have iftar tonight. And then later tonight, we'll talk about a couple of things. This might be the last halakha we do on Monday here before the building hours change. Next Monday, we'll still have something. There's a doctor in our community who just came back from Gaza who wanted to share images and videos of his kind of time in Gaza, and we're thinking we might do that next Monday night if he's not able to come on Friday and do that during Jummah time, like how I did when I came back from Rafa and from the other trips. And then there's another person in our community who is also, was supposed to be in Gaza right now on a second humanitarian visit, but with the escalated violence, the trip got suspended, so he's going to go in late June, inshallah, and wanting to share some stuff. So we're trying to figure out days and times for all of this while the building hours are still kind of till 11 before they shift for the summer, while students are still around, so we can kind of maximize on the number of people being present for all of it. So we'll keep people updated. But likely what we're gonna do in the summer is shift. So as we get closer to iftar time, there's more people here, we'll kind of get feedback from everybody, because we have options of either maintaining our Monday night halakha here, and then the building closes at 8, or we could potentially shift it to my apartment building the way we did last summer, and then we can maintain iftar still on Mondays, and see kind of what makes the most sense. So people always want to think, I live on 23rd Street and 3rd Avenue. It's not a secret where I live. A lot of you have been to my house. For those who haven't, I'd love to have you come over soon, inshallah. We'll decide on that before we wrap up tonight, just in case next Monday we're doing the other program. So in case I forget, people can just remind me. So here we want to kind of get into a last discussion on this hadith. So it's a very foundational hadith in our tradition, Adinu Nasiha, that the deen is like sincere advice. We talked about in a lot of different frames. We talked about who the narrator Tamim al-Dari radiallahu an is, and you can go to like the recordings and all of that, so we don't have to rehash too much of it. But fundamentally, this is what is the foundation of our religion to begin with. When the Prophet alayhi salam comes to Mecca, he's not coming to Mecca to reinforce what's already there. He's coming to Mecca to get people to shift on the way that they interact with each other, the way that they interact with society, the way that they understand and see the world. He's essentially giving them admonition and counsel. They have to determine now if they're going to take it or not. And we see distinct kind of receptive modes. So Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha, the Prophet's wife, she just immediately embraces it. Waraka, who is Khadija's cousin, we have hadith where the Prophet speaks about him saying that he's seen Waraka in Jannah wearing kind of these silver kind of silk robes, cloaks, etc. So there's an understanding that he believes in the Prophet also, right? Ali radiallahu an, when he sees the Prophet and Khadija praying together and he inquires what's happening and the Prophet gives him some insight. If you've come to our Wednesday Sirah class, we talk about this in a little bit more detail some months ago. And then he like accepts the religion. Abu Bakr accepts the religion. There's handfuls of people in the first 2 to 3 years of revelation that take it. And then there's propagation that happens. And there's some people who they're staunch enemies of Islam. They eventually accept Islam. But his mode of engagement is essentially telling them that the way that they're doing things is not the way that things should be done, fundamentally. That their theology has a gap in it that creates an absence of accountability. There's no afterlife believed in the Meccan society. This is where they can treat people terribly who come from the wrong clan, the wrong race, the wrong ethnicity. They're able to bury their daughters in life. He tells people that good religion is not self-serving, but good religion should bring you to take on societal ailments. It should bring you to break down social inequities. And if your practice of religion isn't doing this, then fundamentally, what's the point of your religion? So he's breaking down in a stratified society the same challenges we see today. Issues around race and class, you know, privilege and wealth determine who has and who has not. But the whole idea is that he's telling people that this is what's good for you. If you follow it, then great, good for you in this world and in the next. If you don't, then that's between God and you. Like Allah will determine where you're at. But their whole willingness to receive is going to be rooted in their capacity to actually take advice and counsel from people, right? This is fundamentally why there's this idea that the deen is nasiha, that you're going to have to be able to take counsel and advice if you're going to actually be able to be elevated spiritually within this religious tradition. Does that make sense? So we want to be able to think about this in a few different facets today. Like, how do I give advice? How do I take advice? How is it that I also take the advice that I give to others? Because a good number of people that I sit with in my office, it's really easy for them to give advice to others. But when they have to kind of sip their own tea, it's very tough. You know, so you could tell somebody that you should not let your parents treat you a certain way. You should not let somebody be mistreating you in a relationship. But when you have to apply it back to yourself, there's not necessarily that same sense of, well, why would I let somebody treat me this way when I'm telling you don't treat someone this way, right? And it's not a good or a bad in the sense you want to be self-deprecating, but for us to be able to think out some of these things more concretely. Do you know what goes into some of this is going to be for us to understand how these things of counsel and advice become applicable in these various scenarios. Does this make sense? So what I'd love for us to do just to start getting going, so we can kind of be talking a little bit. Why do you think it's difficult for people to take advice from others? Like, what gets in the way? And don't think about it just simplistic or reductive, but think about those areas where someone has actually given you some type of feedback and you've been willing to take it versus the areas where someone has given it to you and you're not really down to take it. You know, it creates like a challenge in being receptive or responsive. What's like the variables that are different? I'm thinking about yourself holistically as a person, right? Because it can be applicable in a lot of different ways, but you want to become a population that when we read the Quran and the Hadith, we're not hard on ourselves, but at the same time, there's a bridge now between like what we know and how we act on what we know. You know, and that's where contentment resides, in the connection between these two things. But the whole idea is that the book is said to be a lot of different things. It's Shifa, it's Rahma, but it's also Huda, it's Hidayah, right? So the guidance is not coming in any other way other than in an advisorial capacity. Like Allah is going to say, live this way. And then you're going to decide, why do I not listen to what it is that's being said? Do you know what I mean? And for this to be something that doesn't have us throw our backs against the wall, like you've probably heard me say it in different settings if you've been around here, there's no two people in this room who could have a conversation where both of us are anything other than people who are sinners, right? And it's not to be indifferent towards it, but there's nobody who doesn't have something to improve upon. Anybody who's in a conversation with anyone is somebody who is doing something that likely we shouldn't be doing in some capacity. Do you know what I mean? But if we can harness this thing of both giving, but more so receiving advice and admonition, it's going to be quite a game changer in the way our spirituality and our interaction with our inner selves change a lot, you know? And so what makes it hard for us to take advice, which is different from acting upon advice? They're two different things, and we want to nuance it. So step number one is, how do I like deal with this? What gets in the way for me even wanting to hear when somebody's telling me something that is going to necessitate me having to kind of take a reflection back towards myself, that I'm not necessarily being who I should be or who I could be, who I'm supposed to be. Does that make sense? So if you can turn to the people next to you as people are trickling in, like share some names. What gets in the way? What makes it hard for us to actually take advice from people when it's being given? And think about when it's worked and when it's not worked. Because then embedded within that is also a conversation on like the how-tos of us giving this a little bit better. Does that make sense? So if you can kind of exchange names and then kind of talk about it a bit, and then we'll come back and discuss. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are some of the things? Like, what gets in the way? What do we discuss so far? Yeah.
So another thing I spoke about was that I guess what gets in the way is, like, there's a certain sense of ease that comes from empathy, and the only way to you would get that empathy is through, like, self-victimization. And what I mean by that is, like, you make yourself victim to a bunch of scenarios, so you get empathy, or you extract empathy from others, and that gives you a sense of ease and comfort that you just don't want to get out of. If that makes sense.
Can you give me an example of what you mean? Okay, we'll see if you can illustrate it some way, so we can kind of, yeah. Other thoughts? What gets in the way? Yeah.
I was communicating sometimes, like, the difference between when we can take advice and not take advice. It's like, often if the thing is couched in something that we think we have knowledge about, or something that's, like, related to, maybe that's how something our family has been doing for a long time, it's hard to then take advice about doing something the opposite of it, because it's like, then it questions this whole entire lineage of yours, whatever it may be, versus like, okay, even if this is right, it's like, this is how we've been doing. Have we been wrong this whole time, or have I been wrong, whatever it may be? So I think, depending on the situation and who relates to, or where the thing comes from, it comes on to take advice.
Okay. Other thoughts? What do we discuss? Yeah. Great. Any other thoughts? Those are the only things that get in the way. Yeah. So in getting to a place where we want to think about this from the standpoint of spiritual elevation, right? You can't fundamentally have spiritual growth if there's nothing to improve upon. And when you get to a certain place where exposure to religion is just fundamentally about, like, do's and don'ts and rights and wrongs, the whole idea with Islam as a religion is that the bar of entry is not up here. The bar of entry is purposely very low, because anybody can be Muslim if they want to, So religion that claims to be a last religion for all of humanity, for the end of time, that's already existed for more than 14 centuries, it can't be something that has like a very rigid, complex set of obligations and prohibitions, because everything is fundamentally going to then be hard on some segments of the population because we're so diverse. Does that make sense? Right? Like, we're purposely designed to be different from each other. So what we're all required to do can't be the same. Do you know? So embedded within that now is this idea of, well, where does the actual growth come in? And it's not necessarily just about the performance of postures, but how are they a means to something? What is it that's refining my ethics, my values, my character? How do I deal with things like intention? How is it that I act upon what it is that I've been given? So when you have scholars who say to us that if all you have of the Quran is Surat al-Asr, that's all you need, right? Embedded within it is everything that one would need to know. That Surat al-Fatiha essentially holds within it everything that the Quran speaks of. That Surah Ikhlas is a third of the Quran. Like, there's so much that goes into the shorter chapters that can give to us an opportunity for growth and development of insight. But a part of this has to be that we're willing to actually be malleable and molded by it. And if you're in a place where there's rigidity inwardly, then outwardly it's going to also result in rigidity. There's a paradox to our spiritual tradition that a hard heart is a weak heart and a soft heart is a strong heart. When you think about something being strong, it's going to have stability to it, right? If I could like punch my hands through this because it was soft, we wouldn't say that it's strong. But the opposite is true in our spiritual tradition, that a soft heart is what's actually strong, not a heart that's like hard. And what our tradition teaches us, we have hadith. The Prophet alayhi salam, he says, "Inna lillahi ta'ala aniyatan min ahli al-ard wa aniyatu rabbikum qulubi ibadihi as-salihin ahabbuha alyanuha wa arqaha." That inna lillahi ta'ala, that indeed for your Lord, inna lillahi ta'ala azawjal, inna lillahi ta'ala aniyatan min ahli al-ard, that there are vessels for your Lord amongst the people of the earth. وَآنِيَةُ رَبِّكُمْ, and the vessels of your Lord, قُلُوبُ عِبَادِ الصَّالِحِينَ, are the hearts of his righteous servants. أَحَبُّهَا, the ones that he loves the most. أَلْيَنُهَا, are the ones that are the most lean. وَأَرَقُّهَا, and the ones that are most soft, right? The word lean is light, but it isn't light the way that we have lights in the ceiling. When a heart is lean, it means that it's willing to take advice. Like, it's willing to take counsel and admonition. Do you know? Somebody tells you you're doing something, then you're going to be good to actually hear what it is that's taking place. Does that make sense? Like, when we used to be at the church basement on 6th Avenue, I don't know if any of you were ever in that space. Were any of you here ever in the church basement? You were there? Nobody else? Man, are you kidding me? Yeah. So on 6th Avenue, there's a spot that we used to lease while this building was being built. And that was from 2008 to 2012, right? So in 2008, I was 26 years old, right? I'm 41 now. And at 26, I started working here when I was 22. And so when I was giving the Jummah khutbah over there, there was an elder man that came up to me. He's probably as old as your grandfather, if you want to picture him in your head. And he said to me, you know, your khutbahs are very nice, but like the pants you wear under your thobe, they drag on the ground. You know, I used to wear jeans that were pretty long. Now, I could tell all kinds of different things that would come up of opinions on what this idea is of wearing like pants that go below your ankles. This man is old enough to be my grandfather. Do you know? But aside from that, he's talking to me about something that's rooted in the Sunnah. So what's going to rise up in me? Am I going to say something that says, well, here's all these different opinions on this thing? Or am I going to have a recognition of who it is that's actually speaking to me and what it is that I need to be mindful of in my interactions with him? Do you get what I'm saying? And at the slightest of things, we can get tweaked in our ego that becomes fundamental to our theological tradition, that in an Adamic narrative of creation, Iblis, he doesn't want to hear what Allah is telling him. Like Allah is telling in this Adamic narrative of creation, Adam alayhi salam is created, right? He is made of earth, Iblis is made of fire, everything is told to prostrate, and everything does except Iblis, and he's the first racist in his act of flawed logic. He has arrogance and limited knowledge. And all these things combined together create an absence of perspective, right? How he sees it is different from how everyone else sees it. But he thinks because of what he knows, he doesn't have to then listen to what it is that he's being told. He doesn't want to be put in other places other than what he deems to be like a lofty place of existence. Do you get what I mean? And sometimes we don't want to hear from people because we don't necessarily want to take insight or advice from somebody that we believe shouldn't be telling us something. One of the first ways the Meccans responded to a public propagation of Quran was that they basically mocked the Prophet of God. Like, this is the person that you claim is a messenger of Allah. Looking down at him, he came from not the wealthiest of backgrounds in comparison to everybody else. He was a shepherd. He was married to a woman who was older than him, that was basically like providing for him financially in those early stages. There's a lot of different things that when you don't want to hear advice from someone, your mind like rolls out all kinds of things to critique as to why they are not somebody who should be telling you something. Do you know? And that's a problem. Literally in our religion, like Abu Huraira radiallahu an is guarding the Bayt al-Mal, the place where the wealth is of the Muslims, and somebody comes to steal something from it, and he is essentially apprehended by Abu Huraira, and he makes his case, Abu Huraira lets him go. The Prophet like asks him about this person without Abu Huraira bringing it up, and Abu Huraira tells him, and the Prophet said he's a liar. The second night, the same thing happens. The third night, again, it happens, and Abu Huraira says, I'm going to take you to the Prophet. And the man says that if you let me go, I'll teach you something. And he wants to gain this knowledge. And so he tells Abu Huraira that if you recite Ayatul Kursi, it'll keep the shayateen away from you. And when he tells the Prophet what takes place, when he's asked, the Prophet says, this man is indeed a liar, but he told you the truth. And he says that this was Iblis himself, right? Coming to engage you in this way. We can extrapolate a lot from this hadith, but what you want to be able to understand is that Abu Huraira learned something beneficial from Iblis in the hadith. Do you get what I mean? Hassan and Hussein, who are children, right? Like, we have children sitting with us that makes our gathering more blessed. Hassan and Hussein are children, and they see an older companion making wudu wrong. And they go to correct him, they understand his place, so they don't come and blurt in his face something that disrespects his station, but they still, as children, teach him. So they say, let's make a competition and ask him to judge who makes wudu better. And then when one of them makes wudu, they make the same mistake and they start to discuss it. And then they ask the Sahaba, like, which one of us is correct? And he thanks them for not like embarrassing him. But as an elder, he learns from the child. Do you get what I mean? The whole idea first in being able to understand one of these obstacles in taking advice is that the nafs is real, the ego is real, and arrogance is a thing we want to combat. So why does somebody only have to come from your culture or your race in order for them to be somebody that you take advice from? Why does somebody have to come from a certain wealth class or have a certain degree or a certain credential? Like, do you think you could learn something from somebody who lives in the park? Do you think you could learn something from somebody who's serving you your coffee? If the answer is no, then this is one of the reasons why it's hard for you to take advice from people. Do you see the connection point here? If you don't walk on this earth really invoking Allah as Rabbul Alameen, right? You're not calling Him the Rabb of the Dunya, which is the lower materialistic world, but Alameen, the Alam, is rooted etymologically in Ilm, which is knowledge, meaning that like every step you take in this world can be a step of knowing. So there's an opportunity to learn pretty much from everybody. You just have to have an openness to the idea that there are people who will instruct me in ways that come from Allah's choosing, not just for me sitting in a classroom or throwing down X amount of dollars to be able to be recipient of some type of information. Like, children can teach you, the elderly can teach you, people who are rich and affluent can teach you, people who are poor and have no influence can teach you. There's so many different opportunities of learning, but you gotta be open to the idea first that there's anybody that has capacity to give me insight. Does that make sense? Jahiliya is not just a state of ignorance, but Jahiliya was an actual like time period and a mode of perspective. Do you know? And when you look at characteristics of the time of Jahiliya, the hadith give us insight on what kind of things were taking place at the time of Jahiliya. And some of the things that were taking place at the time of Jahiliya, rich people got treated differently from poor people. The way that laws applied to certain people did not apply to other people. It's not any different. When you see these kids in Ole Miss, the university, right? You've probably seen like the videos online. This black woman is being harassed by mobs of white people. People know what I'm talking about. There's a kid who like makes gestures as of a monkey like towards this lady who's getting grilled online right now. But the majority of those kids, they're not going to be chastised or penalized the way children who are minorities would, right? Or you look at the protests at UCLA, where there's literally paid people who come to harass and fight and commit acts of violence and transgressions, and videos will move across, and there's like entire like contingents of uniformed officers just standing and watching. And then when it's all done, they go and arrest the protesters who are protesting peacefully, not the ones who are engaged in acts of violent transgressions. This is qualitatively a definition of Jahiliya. And this is what was taking place in a pre-Islamic Meccan Arabia. And this is the Jahiliya that the Prophet is seeking to break down. It's not jahil in the sense that there's an absence of knowledge, but the ignorance has qualifying kind of characteristics to it that we could break down even further. You can just go look up hadith that describe the age of ignorance, the age of Jahiliya, and what kind of qualities were there, and how you see a lot of those replicated today. Nobody wants to listen to anybody. They don't fundamentally want to hear anything of what anybody has to tell them, and they believe that their privilege and power is what it is that determines decisions and choices, and what is the best way of actually being. Do you get what I mean? You don't want to adopt that way of thinking. So sitting with an idea of being able to think about how anybody has the potential of actually teaching me something. I have full opportunity of actually learning. And when I can acknowledge that as step number one, it then opens up a bunch of other steps that kind of get into the formula. Does that make sense? So I have capacity to learn from whoever it is that comes towards me, right? Ramadan, when we used to be in the church basement over there, one night I came out with some extra food that was left over. There was a man standing on the street asking people for money. I said, do you want some sandwiches? He said, no. I walked away with whatever was the reactive thoughts going on in my head. This guy didn't want my food. He's just asking for money. He's probably not even homeless. He just wants money to buy like alcohol and drugs. And the thoughts are very much present. And this is in Ramadan. So it's telling me something that's about myself, right? The shayateen are chained. So I took a pause and I said, the only person who can tell me why he doesn't want my food is this man himself. So I walked back to him and I said, why don't you want this food? And he simply walked back to a shopping cart that held all of his belongings. And he took out a bag and he said, I already have food. And if you were to give me your food in addition to the food I have, there's no way I could finish it all without some of it going bad. And then I'd have to throw it away. And he said, me living the life that I live, I'm not going to ever throw food away. And then I thanked him for not just teaching me something about him, but teaching me something about me. Do you get what I mean? You're not going to be able to take advice concretely if you don't think that there's room to learn from people of all different backgrounds. And if you don't address the obstacles that are very much there, that get in the way, that I will only listen to people in positions above me. I will only listen to people who qualitatively will offer to me something from experience rooted in the things that we take. There's going to be some people who you want to limit that advice to that we'll talk about in a few steps, right? Like, you shouldn't come and ask me for advice when you have a medical condition. Do you know what I mean? Right? Just like you shouldn't be doling stuff out. You know, so growing up as a son of a doctor, and many of my family members are doctors, and I'm one of the like failed brown kids that didn't become a doctor, right? Which a lot of you are too. If there's a doctor saying, like, I think this, this, or this, and you think about the number of people who go to their physicians and then act contrary to their advice, like, why? Why do you fundamentally believe that you know better than your doctor? They tell you don't eat this stuff and then you leave and you go eat it. Or forget the doctors, right? Because maybe you listen to them. Why don't you listen to dentists? Do you know? Like, you don't listen to dentists. Every time I go to the dentist, because I know, because I don't too. I go to the dentist and the dentist says to me, are you flossing? And I say, clearly I'm not flossing. And they say, you should start flossing. Otherwise, you're going to be miserable as an old person. And I'll say, okay. And then I go back for another cleaning. Did you floss? No, I did not floss, right? What's getting in the way? And I've seen enough old people who have no teeth in their mouth. Do you know? So where is the disconnect? But the understanding is not from the person giving the advice. The understanding is within me. Why am I not adopting it? And what's getting in the way? Do I not see this person as somebody that actually has something to teach me? What creates like short-sightedness for me? Do you get what I mean? The second part to it then is our capacity to actually listen. And listening is in both frames of giving advice as well as receiving advice. Because if I come to ask you, like, hey man, should I get married to this person? How are you going to fundamentally tell me, like, how I should live in my home with my wife when none of you knows my wife or knows the way my wife and I live together? Most of what that mode of advice is seeking is not a listening to respond, but an empathetic listening, a listening to understand. So when you have a prophet, alayhi salam, who doesn't speak so much, he's just hearing and absorbing and listening so that somebody doesn't have to carry on their own and allows for decision-making to still be in the power of the one that's seeking the advice. That empathetic mode of listening that's a listening to understand is also one that when somebody's giving you advice, you got to quiet the nafs and the ego and get to a place where you're just hearing what the person has to say and not jumping to get fired up in the middle of it, that is a product now of me being able to control my emotional state, even when things are heavy and things are difficult, because then you stop listening. How many times have you had a conversation with someone where you interrupt them or they interrupt you? And what's giving weight to the interruption? How often does it happen? A friend, a significant other, a parent, a child. You don't even give people room to express. The listening goes in both directions. If you jump to give advice before a sentence is even finished, or you understand fully through all sensory perception, or when the advice is being given and you can't even stomach hearing it to its end point, it's telling you something about you. So where do I take a breath and just absorb and hear stuff, allow for myself to kind of take it in? And what gets in the way that makes it difficult to listen, both in the giving as well as the receiving of the information? Do you get what I mean? If you get married one day, if you're not married, or you're already married, this is what's going to lend as a key variable to a healthy home: the giving and receiving of information, not the content of it. Communication statistically is only 7% rooted in the actual content of what you say. This is why when people come and they say, I want to like be somebody who teaches Islam to people, you can't just memorize an answer and then throw it at somebody. 93% of communication is non-verbalized. The way that things get packaged, the tone, the volume. This is why like I can stand on a stage and there's 30,000 people in the audience listening to what I say, and my mother is in the audience sitting next to me when I get off, and the next guy gets on the stage. Literally, it's happened to me more than once. And the few times my mom actually comes to hear me speak at these things, and the next person says pretty much verbatim what I said. And my mother looks at me and she's like, this man is so smart. And I'll say, Ami, I just said what he said. And she's like, no, stupid, you didn't say that, right? So I'm going to still always be her kid. And so how she processes what I say is going to be based on that relationship. You're not my mom. You might hear it differently than the way I say it. Do you get what I mean? What gets in the way of listening? Just as a skill set, empathetically, listening to understand, not listening to respond, not listening to argue, not listening to deconstruct, but just listening, which is a hard skill. And what you want to be able to think about this is that it's not that people innately are built with these skills. Your ability to give advice and receive advice is a concrete skill that you can actually develop. It's not something that's just like naturally that somebody's endowed with something. You can have temperaments that are just what you're built upon, but the ability to give as well as receive information is like a skill set that can actually be developed well. You know this just by looking at the companions. At some level, some of them just started listening at some point differently, right? How did Umar become Umar? Because before he became Umar, the person who the Prophet said, لَوْ كَانَ نَبِيًا بَعْدِي لَكَانَ عُمَرُ, that if there was a messenger after me, it'd be best man Umar. Before that, he was somebody who drank alcohol. He was a staunch opponent of the Muslim community. He was a champion of the mushrikeen. At some level, he just started listening differently. Do you get what I mean? Like, you want to build this as a skill, especially in this frame. So what makes it hard to listen? Like, what gets in the way when somebody's asking for advice as well as when somebody's giving advice? Like, what makes it difficult to just simply listen to understand? If you could turn to the persons next to you and talk this out. If you don't know the name of the person next to you, share some names. Like, what makes it hard to listen? And we'll come back and discuss. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Okay, so what makes it hard to listen? Like, what gets in the way? Yeah.
I think, like, when you're not, like, getting harmed directly, or, like, the signs are not visible, it's easier to just sort of ignore the problems as compared to, because, like, the dentist analogy, I had the same experience, right? They said that I'm going to get gingivitis if I don't floss. But like when I see like my gum, if it bleeds or I have loose tooth, I immediately start flossing because I see the signs like visible. Or like my family has like, they're fully, a lot of them are diabetic, but I will drink a lot of sugar. But if like doctor tells me that my sugar level is high, then it's like a wake up call. So I feel like until I don't know I'm in a certain danger, then I will just be like, I'll sort of relax.
Great. Any other thoughts? And this is an important thing to think about, right? Like listening in that state is also not just verbalized things. You know, when I was in my 20s and I was working here in the beginning, my self-care was non-existent. And throughout the course of my 20s, I was getting sick all the time. My weight would fluctuate a lot. It was very heavy. I was very light. I in my late 20s, got shingles, which if any of you have ever had shingles, has anybody ever had shingles? Oh, it's miserable. Yeah. So shingles is usually like something that very older people get. You know, I got in my 20s. If you ever had the chickenpox virus, it stays dormant in your nervous system. And when you get to a high level of stress and low point of immunity, it reactivates as blisters on a nerve track. And so I woke up one morning with these blisters in the middle of my torso all the way to my back. And I went to the doctor and, you know, they told me what I had and it's contagious. I had to be quarantined. And so I ended up going to stay where my parents lived, the house I grew up in. And one night I got an email from a young woman who went to school here at that time. And she had told me that earlier that day in one of our main buildings, the large white building that's across the park, it's called the Silver Building. She had been walking in that building with her Muslim boyfriend, and he grabbed her by the straps of her book bag, threw her into some lockers, and she said, had a security guard not intervened, she didn't know what would have happened. She was reaching out to me now for help in this abusive relationship she was in, and I closed the laptop. I went down to where my mother was watching TV in her living room, and I put my head in her lap and I started to cry. And it wasn't that I didn't know how to support this girl, but I couldn't take care of her because I wasn't taking care of me. But in paying attention to signs and listening to those signs, like my body, my heart, my spirit, my mind, everything was giving me indications that I was running on empty. I just wasn't listening to it. My body had to literally implode on itself, do you know, in order for me to wake up and say, like, what am I really doing? Do you get what I mean? What makes it hard to listen? Like, what gets in the way? Yeah.
I think having, like, bias towards somebody can a lot of times get in the way. Just to give you an example, like, if you're talking to somebody with a different political view, for example, regardless of what the conversation is, you already have a preconceived notion of some of the things they believe in or think about, so it might get in the way of you kind of listening, hearing their input, and like kind of learning from what they have to say. So I think just like dealing with your bias can probably sound good.
Yeah, and that could be applicable in a lot of different situations, right? Our own internalized biases. These aren't things we want to apply to situations of abuse and oppression. Do you get what I mean? So this conversation is not about how do we have like watered down, tokenized, like dialogue sessions with people. That's not what we're saying. But in our day to day, where we have opportunity to engage in actual like listening, understanding, the prism of advice and nasiha, in that way. And sometimes our biases get the best of us. And we fundamentally just don't think that somebody can say something to us that they have merit, right? This happens a lot across like race, class, gender. You know, we look at people the way that they're dressed, the way that they're not dressed, and that then makes us a determination of like their intellectual capacities, you know, if they have something to offer to us or not. Do you see what I mean? What else gets in the way?
May feel like also because I deal with this in my job, I'm younger than most of the guys, so they don't like to listen because they're older than me. They think, what does this young guy know that I don't know? And usually I'm right a lot of the times, so that also comes into play, which also is ego.
Yeah, the ego gets in the way. What else? It's hard to like listen when you have all kinds of distractions around you, right? Like if any of you have ever sat with me in my office, do you know, and you're telling me about heaviness in your life, what if while you were doing that, I was scrolling on my phone? Do you know what I mean? And you could say, well, that's ridiculous, but it's purposeful. When your attention is able to be strategically drawn away from being a source of support and presence, then people are going to turn towards other things, usually that they have to purchase to numb whatever it is that they have going on. And if I can harness your attention in a consumer-driven society to make you want to be listening to something else or be focused in 10 different things, right? There's certain things that we can do while we do something else, do you know? So like you can drive your car and sing a song along with whatever's playing on your sound system in the car, and you'll be fine. Do you know what I mean? You cannot drive your car and text at the same time, right? It's a different level of danger. And if you think that's not the case, I can introduce you to people in our community who can no longer walk. And so you don't want to put yourself in a place where something happens that you think you can do, something that you're just not wired to do. The way Allah has created you cognitively to have two things that necessitate a conscious mode of exertion is not something that's fundamentally possible. But can you do something that is habituated unconsciously while you do something else consciously, right? So can you run on a treadmill while you watch a TV show? Yeah, you fundamentally can. Do you know? Can you sing in the shower, right? Yes, like you can. Can you fold laundry while you're on the phone with someone? Probably, if you've done it enough. Do you know what I mean? But there's a lot of things that people think they can multitask on that they can't. You cannot multitask on the giving and receiving of advice. Like, it just doesn't work that way. And so when you have hadith that say that the Prophet ﷺ turned his entire attention towards somebody, did not turn his back towards anybody that was speaking to him, right? Both on the giving and receiving end, if somebody is addressing you and you are addressed in a different direction, how are you going to like hear from them? Unless it's something that's strategic. So if you have like young children, for example, in your life versus like teenagers or people who are a little bit more grown. So think about if you've ever been in a setting with an older person and the mode through which advice is given is not just I'm sitting in this chair and you're sitting in that chair. So when you have hadith where the Prophet ﷺ is sitting on the front of a horse and there's somebody sitting on the back of a horse and counsel is being given, right? The Prophet's walking with Mu'adh ibn Jabal to the outskirts of the city and he's giving him advice. Do you know? A teenage kid is not going to listen to you the same way as somebody who's sitting in a therapist's office. Do you get what I mean? So the mode through which we understand this like front-facing engagement is not always what was done by the Prophet of God, who was the best of teachers. He knew how to speak to someone by giving him his full attention without having it be something that created a sense of awkwardness amongst them. Do you get what I mean? So there's a lot of like young men who learn from older men while they're painting the side of a wall, or they're hammering nails into like a wall. Do you get what I mean? Does that make sense? But the capacity to listen necessitates removing the things that are distracting. And the ability to then give and receive is also about creating the opportunity that says, well, where am I mindful of the other person's ability to actually receive? Do you know what I mean? So you want your partner to hear from you. It's probably not the best time to call, like in the middle of a work meeting. Somebody's running to get out the door, right? My wife and I, our kids are now 8 and 11. It's a little different from when they were younger. But Priya's job is like more structured in its hours, right? I have a make-believe job. Do you know what I mean? So I have like, I got here this morning at 8:30. I'm going to leave here tonight probably at like 10 something. Do you know? It's not a problem. Like, I love what I do. But tomorrow, I can like schedule my routine a little bit differently. It's got more malleability to it. So in the morning, as we're getting kids ready, when they're now 3 and 6 and not 8 and 11, is a little bit different of a stress in the morning. And getting out to daycare and getting out to kindergarten and getting out to work. So that's not the time to have a conversation, because the distraction is not a piece of technology. The distraction is all these other things that are vying for our attentiveness. Do you get what I mean? It has to make sense, like the opportunities that you're creating for the environment to be, for both parties to be ready, barring like emergency situations. Do you know? So somebody dies, God forbid, in the family, and you gotta like have someone be present, they gotta be present. There's an accident that comes up, there's an emergency situation. But most of those conversations that we believe have to happen right now in the moment, they probably could happen a little bit later when everybody's ready to give and receive a little bit better. Do you get what I mean? Identifying distractions, though, are going to be important to be able to break away from like what gets in the way from listening. Does that make sense? And so then you take hadith that give us these insights that like there's no prayer when there's food being served. It doesn't mean you don't pray at the time Maghrib comes in, But your stomach is now where your thoughts are going to be if the food is there on the table and you're trying to bang out some rak'ahs, right? Or like you have to go to the bathroom and you decide, I'm not going to make wudu again. So you're trying to hold your wudu in the course of the jama'ah, praying that the imam reads short surahs. But like they're not going to, and you're going to be miserable. But that's what's going to be the focus. You're not going to have focus in your prayer. You're going to be focusing on like, I hope I just don't fart right now. Do you know what I mean? But you're bringing the distraction in. Does that make sense? So it's hard to listen when there's other things vying for your attention. And that can also be applied to like your sleep habits being poor, like your consumption habits not making any sense, like exhaustion fitting in a lot of different ways. What gets in the way that makes it hard for me to be paying attention fully? Do you get what I mean? And then a third part to this on the advice giving and receiving is, who am I actually going to for the advice, and why am I answering the questions that are being asked of me? I had a teacher who studied usul al-fiqh for 7 years, Islamic legal theory. And somebody asked him a question about whether a flyer looks good or not. And he says, would I have a comment on this? Do you know what I mean? The challenge comes in that a lot of our lives get messed up because we're asking people for advice on things that they're not qualified to ask, like to be asked for advice. Religious leadership does not equate to absolute leadership in our tradition. So anecdotes that you probably are privy to are things that actually happen quite often. Friends of mine who studied Islam that aren't blessed to serve a community the way I'm blessed to serve this amazing community get to places where they have to agree to do things that they're not qualified for. So somebody who studied to be a jurist or a theologian, why would they be good at marriage counseling? And that's not to discount anybody, but now that person has no choice other than take that job, and you're going to walk into an office, or you're going to go on YouTube, and you're going to say, what does Sheikh so-and-so say about this situation? If someone's not trained in certain capacities, or they don't have that experiential understanding as a scholar practitioner, they're giving you subjective anecdotal advice. People ask the Prophet ﷺ when they should plant their crop to get harvest, and he says something to them, and then they plant, and then there's nothing reared from the crop. And they ask, like, why did you tell us to plant in this way? And he says, why did you ask me? Like, I'm not a farmer. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense? And so the ways that you go to ask the people who know, that are not going to always be your friends, who have no shortage of giving you advice. You don't want to tell people things that make no sense. The amount of people that sit in my office who make terrible life decisions because they have all of their friends and family members' words and clutter in their heads and their heart also, because they're asking questions and getting answers from people who shouldn't be answering those things. Do you know what I mean? And then they make decisions that at the base of it, we're going to have accountability to it. So Imam Malik, when he's asked 40 questions, and to 36 of them, he says, I don't know. And the person who comes all the way from Al-Andalus to ask these questions in Medina and says, you are the shining star of Medina. You are Imam Malik and you are asking, I'm asking these questions. I came from far, man, right? And you said, I don't know to 36. He says, I don't know. Because it's not a game. It's like a very real thing. And you think in the last day, the last week, the last month, how many pieces of advice have you given to people that they've actually taken, that create potential challenges for them on how to like manage their anxiety, on whether they should get married to somebody or not, on like anything that they have going on in their life. You gave them some counsel without even hearing like where they're coming from. Do you know? There's hadith where a companion comes to the Prophet, Ya Rasulullah, can I kiss my wife while I'm fasting? And he says, yes. To another, Ya Rasulullah, can I kiss my wife while I'm fasting? He says, no. They ask the same question and get a different answer. Why? Because they're different people. If you have like a rote answer that you give out constantly to people about stuff, that's not an absolute. Don't eat pork means don't eat pork. But everything is not just don't eat pork type questions. Do you get what I mean? And because a lot of us in this religion don't know how to think outside of fiqh terminologies, because all we're given is ritual and practice, black and white, we come with, what does Islam say about X, Y, and Z? Islam is not a person that manifests in a human form that then can answer these questions. A lot of what we're given in the Quran presents to us opportunities for how we resolve ethical dilemmas. It doesn't say, open this page and it's going to tell you here and now, this is how you do these things. It's going to want you to make a choice. And a part of the choices that you choose are who you're going to give advice to and who you're taking advice from. Does that make sense? What are the criteria or qualities that you would look for in somebody who you would take advice from on different situations? Does the question make sense? You want to have a conscious mode of understanding. Your heart is more precious than just allowing for sound bites online of lectures that you weren't even sitting in that took place years ago to define how it is that you make your choices. You got to build relationships with people that could be multiple across different fields. But as a starting point, what are some of the qualities we should look for? This is Issam, by the way. Issam, you want to wave to everybody? Today's Issam's first day working at the IC. He joined as a digital media coordinator for our team. To make dua. He's a really nice guy, mashallah. And you're going to probably see a lot of him around. So if you see him, introduce yourself to him. Let him feel welcome in our community and what it's like to be part of this amazing community in service of it. And introduce him to people as you kind of see him around, inshallah. But he's going to be around a lot more. Feel free to introduce yourselves to him. So if you could take a couple minutes and turn to the persons next to you, what are some of the qualities we look for in somebody that gives us advice? You want to know this so that you're not just turning to people at your wit's end, and it's like, somebody just help me. Do you know what I mean? But proactively, like, what are some of the things that should be present in the people that we're taking kind of advice and counsel from in whatever the issues might be that are coming up. So you can turn to the persons next to you and kind of take some insight from one another, and then we'll come back and discuss. Go ahead.
I was gonna tell you, I was gonna just record you like randomly, so you might see me just go around.
Totally fine.
Yeah, you'll probably just see me around with the camera pointed at you. Randomly.
Were you planning on staying here this late?
For iftar.
You will?
Yeah.
You didn't have to go be someplace?
I was gonna leave, but then I was like, I might as well break my fast here as well.
Okay.
And then I was helping out Brother Khalid set up with the food and everything.
How did that go?
It went well. It's almost done.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
okay? What are some of the things we should look for? Like, we're looking for somebody who we're going to take advice from. Like, what should that person be about? What are some of the qualities?
Good character.
Good character. Good character.
How they act, like, in adversity.
How they act in adversity. Okay, yeah.
Okay, maybe we should pick somebody we might actually listen to. If you're not going to listen to them, then start.
Pick somebody you listen to. Okay, yeah. Other things? What other qualities?
Compassionate.
Compassionate. Yeah. Great. Yeah.
I would go for someone who's actually doing what I'm looking for. Although I won't discredit no one else, but I would listen to someone else, but I would actually strive to go for someone who's actually doing something. Like, if, for instance, I need something for education, for religious, I would go to someone like you. Or any one of the brothers in here, but I would more aim someone like you because I know you're more knowledgeable. You can probably help me more in that category. I wouldn't just go to someone sitting on a park bench. Although I would listen to what they have to say, though, but I would take your advice more over theirs.
Okay. Other thoughts? You want to, like, build that reflection and think about, why do you take advice from the people that you do? And why are there some people that you don't hear from them or listen to them? There's a couple of other frames that we want to look at this in. We can look at this also in the frame of, like, who is it that you should be actually giving advice to? And advice is different from emotional support. A good number of people, when they turn to us, they're not looking for solution orientation. They're looking for validation of what they're feeling. Do you know what I mean? Because sometimes the anxiety that rises in us, it brings us to a place where we don't want someone to feel bad, and we love them and we care about them. So we'll say, why don't you do this or try that or do that? What they sometimes just need is somebody to say, like, this is really hard and I'm going to carry this with you. Like, you don't have to hold this all by yourself. Do you know? Some of the people that you take advice from, not all of them, but some of them have to be people who are accessible. Like, it's going to be a process. Do you know what I mean? So sometimes there's an advantage. You walk into a place and there's a person who's a prominent expert in a field and you want to hear their thoughts on something. That person might not be somebody that you're going to have interactions with day to day for the rest of your life. But if you open up on certain things, there's got to be a continuity to some of that kind of engagement. And on the other end of it, if you invite somebody to come speak to you, it's not a matter of convenience. It's got to be something that you make yourself readily available at the times that they need, within reason. But it's not just a one-off. Do you get what I mean? The last thing that I wanted us to think about, and I would invite you to reflect on here as well as, like, individually and together, why is it hard for us to take the advice that we give to others? Like, what gets in the way? I've been here for 19 years, and I can tell you, if I sat with someone in my office and I said, if somebody else came and sat in this office and told me that they were going through what you were going through, you know definitely what you would tell them to do. Why are you telling yourself something different? You know that you would not let your friend be treated by a boy the way you let a boy treat you. You know there's no way that you would tell someone close to you that walked in here that it's okay for their parents to treat them the way that their parents are treating them. Why is it easier for you to give somebody else some advice, but you're not willing to give it to yourself in the same way? Do you get what I mean? And this becomes, like, a big challenge for many of us. I can give you advice, but it's hard for me to let myself be in a place where I'm willing to take the advice that I'm giving to somebody else. Do you know? And it's a different variation of lima taqulu ma la taf'alun, that why do you say that which you do not do? It's not hypocrisy, but there's absence sometimes of self-care, self-love, self-kindness, self-compassion. Do you know? You don't want to see somebody else get hurt, but you make excuses as to why you let somebody else hurt you. Do you see what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Maghrib is going to come in 3 minutes. So we're not going to delve into those two things a little deeper. Some of the things that I was sharing with people before we started, next Monday is going to either be like the last halakha we do of this text for the semester before we shift to summer hours, or this one will be. We had a doctor in our community who returned from Gaza recently that wanted to kind of share with us images and videos. I'm hoping that that'll work out in Jummah, but if it doesn't, then what we're gonna do is probably have on one of the weeknights before the academic semester ends. It'll likely be Monday night of next week. But either way, thanks, man. We're gonna have from the following Monday, so not the 13th, but the 20th, a shift in building hours, which will have the building closed on the weekends following the 17th, and it'll be open only till 8 p.m. On week nights. So, for example, Maghrib is going to get later into the summer. And what we did last semester, or last year, was shift our Monday night halakas to my apartment building, which is on 23rd and 3rd. And then we still had iftar for everybody, like potluck style. You can, like, just shoot me an email and let me know. If you would prefer to maintain this here, we would go till like 7:30 so that people would have time to get someplace to pray Maghrib, because we won't be able to make Maghrib here. The building closes at 8. Or if you're good with us shifting it there, and then there's no time limit, and then we would have the halakha probably starting at around like 7 as Maghrib gets later, 6:30, 7. And then we'd have iftar. And last year we would like have people there probably till like around 9:30, 10 o'clock, and just be in each other's like company and build community and sohba. But just think about those things and shoot me a message and let me know, so we're not putting anyone on the spot and you can feel comfortable sharing whatever your thoughts are. Does that make sense? Okay. Tomorrow, Dr. Murmur will have his halakha. On Wednesday, Dr. Marwa will do hers, and then I'll follow at 7. And then on Thursday, with Faith NYC, we'll do their monthly halakha with Imam Zakir. It's for like our professionals community. Friday, we're going to have our post-Jumma community lunch. And then Sunday, we're doing a film screening that we sent email out about today of a documentary whose name I'm forgetting. Does anybody remember the film? Jude. The film is called Jude?
Q.
Q? The director's name is Jude. Yeah, Sam, you want to tell people about the film since you've watched it?
Yeah, so it won the Tribeca's Best Documentary. It's about a cult in Lebanon. This girl tells a story about her mother and how she grew up in Lebanon. I don't want to spoil too much, but it just follows her around as she talks about her experience growing up. It's a very good movie. I don't want to say too much because it's going to spoil it, but it's, you guys check it out. 7 p.m. Sunday? Right?
4:30, the doors will open, and 5 o'clock we'll start the film screening. It'll be in the lecture hall of in the basement of this building. So come and check it out. And then there'll be a talk back with the director, Jude, who Issam was telling me earlier today he's met and like is a really amazing person. So you should come check that out. And then we'll send out info about some of these firsthand experiences on the ground in Gaza for next week and keep people updated on that. And then later tonight or tomorrow, I'm going to send an update on where we're at just in our building space project. Alhamdulillah, we're doing pretty well. We've raised about, I think, $4.5 or $4.6 million. We're trying to get to $5 million in this first round of fundraising. So people can just help to circulate some of that as the email comes out. We'd appreciate it. So we're going to take a pause here. There'll be iftar after Maghrib, so please stick around even if you weren't fasting. If people could just move the chairs back to the wall. And then, can one of you guys call the adhan? Anybody feel like calling it? Dr. Marwez will be till June 30th, and then she'll resume again in August.